Hi, all listeners, and warmly welcome to us at Mitt Liv and our podcast, An Inclusive Labour Market, and our role models that will join us for talks about DEI. And the purpose of this interview series is to get behind the scenes and learn more about DEI from a leader perspective. And you will have the chance to meet some of the most well-known and amazing leaders in some of the largest companies and get their view on why DEI and how walk the talk. But for you who doesn't know much about us, we have been around with Mitt Liv now since it was founded 2008. And our vision is to work for an inclusive society and a labor market that values diversity. And if you want to learn more about us, you feel free to visit our homepage, mittliv.com. But the most important today, we have the big honor to have a special guest on board. And Marcus Neuhaus, a distinguished Swiss business leader with an amazing career, holding a Doctor of Law degree and certified as a tax expert, completed executive leadership and management courses at the International Business Schools. Marcus' impressive journey began at PwC in 85, and from 2003 to 2019, Marcus served as the CEO and also later chairman of PwC Switzerland. And internationally, Mr. Neuhaus excelled as the global leader for M&A, tax and legal services, and hold key roles in PwC's global leadership. And currently, Marcus holds leadership positions in various boards, displaying a strong commitment to corporate governance and leadership development. And you will now have the chance to get learnings and insights from a great leader, as well as perspectives on D&I from a board perspective. So warm welcome, Marcus. So happy to have you here. How are you today?
Very good. Welcome to everybody. It's a great honor to be here. And I'm very much looking forward to this exchange. I'm doing fine. I just came back yesterday evening from Valencia, from a perfect weekend in a tremendous city. I've never been there before, but I can only recommend it. Extremely interesting. And 2 weeks ago, I was in South China, in Shenzhen, which is all very interesting to see how things evolve there. And at the end of the tour, we could visit the new M+ Museum in Hong Kong, which is this new museum actually filled with contemporary Chinese art from the collector Uli Sik. And he personally was there to introduce us into his collection. So I'm really doing fine, and I have an interesting life.
Wow, it sounds amazing.
I'm also working, so.
Yeah, and you and I met at I've been on many seminars over the years, but I went to a quite amazing seminar that you are also involved in, Stars of the Next Generation Leaders for Switzerland. And when we met, I felt I had 100 questions for you, Marcus. So instead of solving them all there, we decided to go live in this podcast, because all your insights and all your learnings, I think we are many listeners who are curious about how we over the last decades have actually taken on one of, well, for the moment, biggest topics, ESG, and specifically in our case, and what this discussion will be about the S. But I just wonder if we start with you. I mean, you do so many different amazing things and have a huge opportunity to have a great impact. But could you just tell us a little bit more about who are you and what are the big milestones in your career, would you say, that has taken you where you are today?
Yes, of course. I grew up in Zurich in a pretty open environment where curiosity and openness was important, but also based on values like self-responsibility. So you start with yourself before you ask for kind of assistance or so. So you start with the question, what can I contribute, not what can I receive? And that's also the kind of values that drove me during my entire life. Then which already at school time, I was engaged in sports, in team sports, handball, which I once in an interview said this was the most important thing I did during my first 20 years in my life. because I mean, it brings you together with other team members, and you have to learn how to care for others and play together, and only together you are strong as an individual. You achieve nothing. And these are the kind of values which, I mean, they are in me, but they were also important in my entire personal development. And then I studied law at the University of Zurich, which, I mean, I was kind of in between of business administration or law and so, but then, I was more interested in I think, intellectually. And I'm not saying anything about anyone else, but I think intellectually it's even more diverse to study law. But at the end, I mean, as a business leader, I came back to business administration and management. And so anyway, but that's what I was really interested in is this intellectual deep analysis which you have to do as a lawyer. So that's why law and myself was a pretty good fit. And again, during university time, I was engaged in non-commercial activities, be it in sports where I held a role and a number of other things. And so that was always went kind of in parallel, my own development, my own activities, but activities for others. And in non-commercial organizations. So that's how I grew up, and I started as a part-time assistant at PwC, and did in parallel my PhD. And then, I mean, it's the kind of good career from a part-time assistant to the CEO and chairman of the board, which is obviously still possible. And I've been many times been asked, why did you never leave? Because, I mean, I spent 34 years at PwC, but I joined the firm where we were in Switzerland, 70 people. And I was the number 15 in tax consulting. They, PwC in Switzerland, and this was about the number 15 in size in Switzerland. Today, PwC in Switzerland is by a distance the number one, has more than 3,500 people and 800-900 tax advisors. So I never had a reason to leave because there was so much going on. We merged two times and really created a new firm through the merger. So it was not just a blunt takeover and killing of the others, but going together and creating a new firm at the new level. And therefore, I never had a reason to leave, and never regretted to have stayed, and so that's where we are. And at 60, it's over. So I then ask myself, what do I want to do after PwC? And there is a life after 34 years, and I happily landed on a number of boards where I continue to contribute, and that's my life.
But it sounds amazing. I mean, for me, as an maybe a bit of an entrepreneur, it sounds like you have this in you too, the entrepreneurship or intrapreneurship. How was it to be part of the of building something that long term, and now, I mean, what you have accomplished is amazing. And did you know you had this entrepreneurial or intrapreneurial, if you call it so, spirit in you?
Well, I mean, when I got interviewed, or when I did my held my interview to join PwC, this was when I was still at university. So 6 months before my graduation, I had my interview. And I asked a senior partner at that time whether it would be possible to take an equity in the firm. Mm-hmm. In my interview when I was still at university. Wow. And so yes, I mean, back to your answer, yes, this was kind of an idea or a dream. Would it ever be possible? And he said yes, but kind of wait a minute, not just tomorrow. Because I mean, PwC has always been a partnership, so that there is always this equity and partner component. But he said, yes, but wait a minute. I mean, my father was a doctor, so I'm not coming from an entrepreneurial house, but my grandfather was for some time an entrepreneur and then and worked in the watch industry. And my other grandfather had his own business, which is still in the family. So I'm not a shareholder there, but it's my cousin owns it. So there is a bit of this environment that, I mean, I still had to develop it by myself. But I had this keen interest in, will this ever be possible or not?
Wonderful to hear. And you also been, I mean, your long career at PwC has, I guess it's been up and downs, but also the persistence and being brave of building something, and building an organizational culture that is sustainable and long-term. For us at Mittliv, it means also to approach the people and culture aspect is crucial to have the people on board. But what would you say if we come to PwC and building an organizational culture, and also to connect it to the D&I topic, what would you say has been the crucial moments and most important actions to build a strong culture and also implementing DEI at PwC Switzerland?
Yeah, I became the CEO of the Swiss firm in 2003. And soon after, I went into the management board, the executive team, and said, and I was the youngest of this team. I was the new CEO, I was the youngest. And I said, look, I want to start a project for client relationship management. And then the elderly fellow partners looked at me and said, do you really want to do that? Because you should know your predecessor failed twice with such a project. So is it the best idea as a new CEO to start with such a project? And then I said, yes, I know, of course, the two previous projects, because I was part of the organization, but I want to do it differently because I do not intend to make an IT project, but I want to develop a new form of client interaction, and we will find an IT machine to support that. So to find the IT machine was kind of the last step in this project. Now all the IT guys who may listen to this podcast may say doesn't understand anything, but anyway, it was the successful way because we started with exactly this question of how do you understand other people? What are the client needs and how do we interact with clients? What is needed from our side, what is needed for our people to engage them to start this in kind of interaction with the clients to better understand our clients. and the team members got that and kind of said, okay, that makes sense. And we started also a research to analyze what really matters for our clients or potential clients. And we did market research, we asked our clients and so on, we asked our people internally what they think is important. And leading in a partnership is a bit different than in a classical top-down executive kind of organization. So From the beginning, I involved the partners at regular partner meetings. We developed together pieces and components of this whole project, and which we then finally brought together under a set of behaviors which really make a difference. And we also, together with the partners or at partner conference, we developed kind of to do approaches and not to do approaches, what is typically successful and what is typically not successful, and this was not based on this is what you must do. But it was very much based on find out from the others, from the clients, from the targets, what really matters, listen to them, and then build this, what you learn, into your approach, and then go back with what you have heard and what we can add to what you have heard. So this kind of interaction is how you behave in an open way was the key of this whole project. And because partners had contributed to it and had built up components by themselves, they started to say, hey, when will it be finished? When will we receive it? Rather than when the rollout started saying, we don't like it, we have never heard about it. And so it was developed by them, so they were waiting for it. So the rollout was very easy. So this is one element how I included the ones who then were responsible also for the execution. And it was really a sort of co-creation of something which they then kind of immediately accepted. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because we did this in Switzerland, mm-hmm. and later learned that the US firm and the Australian firm had undertaken a similar exercise. Mm-hmm. So 3 years later, and we then compared the results, and not surprisingly, because they also did the market research and asked clients, and so they came to pretty much similar conclusions. So 3 years later, we were able to combine this into a global initiative, which we then called PwC Experience. And we slightly extended it to the people, internal people side. Because initially it was really, the focus was outside, the clients' interactions, but it was very easy to extend it and include the internal people side. Because clients are people and internal people are people. Mm. So the fundamental needs are the same. Mm. And therefore, it took almost no time to also make it an internal project. How do you interact internally within? How do you build teams? Mm. How do you bring new members into a team? And it was very easy because we of course also had to deal with the question, can you develop global behaviors? When you talk about Europeans, Americans, I mean, people from Japan, China, and so are there global behaviors or not? And we concluded yes, and that's true.
And what are those?
We had for us, and in other situations it might be different, but for us it was absolutely fundamental to start with the relationships. Mm. Now, what kind of relationship do you have? And we also find out you don't need to know someone for the last 25 years in order to talk about the relationship. If you have a common business need, for instance, you can build up a relationship pretty quickly. But how do you do that? How do you find out what really matters from a relationship point of view? Second layer was share and collaborate. And this has a lot to do with diversity and inclusion. Collaborate, share, collaborate, give before you ask. And how do you build up this exchange? And then the third dimension was put yourself into the other shoes. So it doesn't really matter what you want. It matters what the others want. And finally, how do we create value? And what is value? Value is very subjective. Value for you may be something different than value for me. Mm. And value for you today may be different than value in 1 year's time. Mm. But you have to find out through this interaction, through the relationship, etc. And these four fundamental principles were the foundation of everything we did. Mm. And the response to these four dimensions is different if you are the CEO of a firm or whether you are a new assistant in a firm. Mm. It's all based on the four same principles. And because it was basically, and it's true for clients and it's true internally. And because the principle was pretty fundamental and you could, or you personally or your team, you could do an exercise. And before we went into a new pitch for a client, we exactly went through these questions. What do you think? Where are the relationships? What's important from a relationship point of view? What is the sharing and collaboration which is expected? What do they really need and understand? And what's value from that perspective? So you could every pitch, every client interaction, every presentation you could prepare based on these four dimensions. And that was really the most important. I mean, you asked the question, what was the most important kind of initiative or moment? Mm. We did 5 years, and initially we had the project, but it dragged along a bit. And then in one global meeting, I was a bit vocal and saying I'm not happy how the execution works. And guess what? A few weeks later, I got from the global CEO call whether I would take over the global lead for that, in addition to be the CEO in the Swiss firm. Mm. And I mean, there are the moments in time where, mm. I mean, you don't have much choice. You either say yes or you never get the call again. So I did it, which was very intense, but extremely rewarding, a role which I could play because I could go around the world and mm. workshops with the leadership teams around the world and so. And 5 years later, we did an internal survey and asked the PwC people what was the most important initiative in PwC in the last years. And guess what they said? It was PwC experience, because it really engaged everyone. From day mm. one, onboarding, mm. you start to talk about PwC experience and these four dimensions. So everybody knew it, this was really the most important also contribution yeah. I could make.
Mm. I this sounds like song in my ears. But would you say there has been has it been hard to bring everyone on board during this journey, or how did you manage that? If you don't sign under the values and the behaviors for the company, what happens then?
Well, as I said, the phase one in Switzerland, I think it was really crucial that I included the partners in building up components mm. of the whole concept. I mean, we had the idea of the concept, but then to include the partners and really build important components by themselves mm. Brought them to the point that they said, hey, is it now finished? Does the rollout start this afternoon or tomorrow? So mm-hmm. this was crucial. To how this co-creation was very important. Now, at global level, it was, of course, a bit more difficult because I was the CEO in the Swiss firm, but at the same time, I had this global role. But I went into other territories and worked with kind of peer CEOs. So they had to accept that another CEO who is basically on the same country level kind of came in and as a global leader at the same time. And help to develop their environment. But I mean, there is really about people, whether you come in with arrogance, whether you come in by saying, hey guys, I mean, we want to do it together. And the result should be that you take something away. Mm. It will be you, not me, mm. not me. And what I also did is we started with the 21 most important countries within PwC, because they make up 85% of revenues. And I had to report back also in front of the 21 CEOs on a quarterly basis. And to report on the progress done and where are the various countries and so. So I always had 21 lines with the traffic light stuff and so. But I never mentioned the names of the countries. Mm. It was just 21 lines mm. with red or green or amber or so. Never any countries. Mm. I didn't want to blame. I didn't want to start blaming one in front mm. of the other. Mm. But it was quite funny that because after a few times, these CEOs came to me and said, look, I really want to move to green.
Oh, wow. So
how many others were moving and some were not.
Mm. Mm.
So they came back and said, well, I mean, I get it. It's not good to still be on red. So we really want to move forward. And so that's also, I mean, small things, but I mean, if I'm pretty sure that if I went in and kind of blamed certain people in front of others, I would have closed doors.
Mm.
And by doing so, I could keep the doors open or open doors which were closed before. And of course, it was also helpful to come from a country where we were pretty successful.
Mm.
I mean, coming with a backpack of success, of course, improves or strengthens your credibility.
But this humbleness you have, Marcus, did you bring it into your also your board role for PwC and in the other boards where you now are represented? What do you bring into a board perspective that you think has an impact with the values you bring and with the perspectives you bring? And what is the board's role when it comes to this inclusive mindset and humbleness for the diverse thought and so on? What would you say is the board's responsibility and what do you bring there?
Yeah, I mean, this is also feedback that I'm receiving, because of course every year we do the self-assessment in the boards or the committees which I'm chairing, and I developed a kind of 10 question set of 10 questions for this self-assessment, which we are now using pretty widely in the boards where I am, rather than a 50 question set or so or whatever. And one of the key questions is, can all the members of the committee or the board contribute? So it's really very much a qualitative assessment of how the team is performing. So, I mean, first of all, are we covering all the tasks that we need to cover? Secondly, can everybody contribute, and is everybody being listened? So we want to have this open exchange. And yes, I get this feedback that I'm not, I mean, I know pretty well what I want.
Mm.
So I think the things through before I start an initiative and so. But then I really want the others, and there is the responsibility of the others. I really want the others which we are choosing from based on a diverse landscape, because we want to have different skills and experiences around the table. So I also expect the others to really contribute and speak up, so that we have the full set of views around the table. And if that confirms my view, then even better. If it doesn't, then we have to adjust. And I listen first in these discussions. Of course, as I said, I have my, because I thought through, I have an idea. But then I listen and see how things develop. And I get regularly feedback that yes, that is working well, and that we have an open and transparent dialogue, and we come to mutually supported and agreed and kind of co-created solutions. So yes, and I think that's important, because otherwise I could do it by myself, which would clearly not be as successful as listening and co-creating with others.
Mm. But we're talking about now the big mega trends, like the demographic changes and older population, migration, sustainability, all the AI, digitalization, robotization, and all those aspects, but also then sustainability, both the E and S. Where do you think those sustainability topics are heading out from a board perspective? Because just some background, because at Mitliv we have more and more investors approaching us and asking, how can we set up requirements for our boards to approach the S in ESG? And then my wonder is how what are the requirements from the boards for their COOs to approach the S in ESG? So what is your view on that? Where is this heading, so we also embrace the future and push those topics in the right direction?
Yes, the typical answer from a lawyer, it depends, but it really does. The three examples of my boards of quoted companies where I'm sitting. One is Barry Callebaut, so chocolate, cocoa, chocolate. And the other one is Galenica, pharma logistics and pharma retail, and Baloise, the insurance company. And the challenges with ESG are completely different for these three companies. And I may start with Barry Callebaut. I mean, in a critical industry, cocoa production in Africa, and we all know what the challenges there are. I mean, there is deforestation, there is child labor, there is poverty, there is corruption, there are challenges with the supply chain, etc. And we are in the middle of that. I mean, of course, we are the largest buyer of cocoa, processing 25% of the world cocoa. So, I mean, we are in the middle of it. So already almost 10 years ago, we said, I mean, this is not just strategic, but a question of survival, that we address these ESG challenges. And we developed an entire concept. And when I say we, I shouldn't say we because it was before my time, so I could jump on the ship. But the company developed an entire framework, Cocoa Horizon, then called, which we kind of made to the global standard. And we committed to stop deforestation and even to go to reforestation. We currently plant 1 million trees a year, which is still just a small thing, but still. And we said poverty is a huge problem, because if farmers are too poor, they walk out and walk into the cities, and there is no cocoa production left. So, I mean, it's also self-interest, but still. Mm. Therefore, we said, I mean, there must be a minimal income for farmers, which is still a challenge. And I'm not saying that we have solved all the problems, but that's the way which we, the future which we kicked off. And we say we go against child labor, which is very much linked to poverty, because if farmers are too poor, they take their children with them to help them on the farm. And we also said we need to deal with the entire supply chain of other products, I mean, like sugar and vanilla and so, which we use big time. And say we have to work together with these suppliers to make sure that they are also sustainable. So we have an entire range of activities which we are rolling out that comes with a price, yes. But we are convinced that, as I said before, otherwise we won't have cocoa trees and farms anymore. And it's just the right thing to do. And we also see it from clients who say, because we are not retail, so we are just B2B, but our B clients, they come to us because we take this very serious, and they want, as the end product producer, they want their products to be sustainable. And therefore, they turn around to us and say, hey, you better make sure that cocoa and chocolate that you deliver is produced in a sustainable way. So for us, it's also a prerequisite to stay in business. But I think we are the largest, and we are the one who drives it most. So that's in this industry. Then when you go to insurance, I mean, the own emissions, for instance, that's minor. That's not so relevant. A couple of office buildings and so. I mean, this is not what really changes the world. But asset management and the insurance business as such, the underwriting, what do we underwrite, which assets do we underwrite, and what emissions, for instance, or what ESG impact do these assets have? That's a crucial point. That is work in progress based on our strategy. We're not there yet. We still have to figure out, like, I mean, for most companies, the transition is important. You cannot expect today you can just switch from 100 to zero, but it's a transition in which direction you want to go, and we are working on these strategies. And finally, for Galenica, pharma, logistics and retail, we just recently at an investors conference got the feedback that they said, look, I mean, sustainability for you, that's a no-brainer. You do it anyway. We give you 100 points for that. Let's talk about something different. But we still take this serious. And again, we have our own emissions, for instance, like the buildings, the plants and all that stuff. I mean, all our roofs are full of solar panels. And that's already kind of basic stuff that you're doing. But their most important is security for patients. When we talk about the S, social responsibility or the availability of pharmaceuticals. So how do we make sure that the supply chain is full, which is a challenge now in many countries? And there is a much bigger and specific responsibility that they're having. So back to, what I said at the beginning, it depends. So you really have to look at your own activities and design a strategy around your activities and where you have the biggest impact. And there you have to focus to make a change.
And we know that we have to do this regarding to governance and or to be compliant as companies, but there is must do and there is good to do and want to do. But what would you, the companies that hasn't even started the journey, what is your best tips to take action on this? What is the first step to start doing something?
Well, as you just said, you have to do this distinction. What are the must-dos? And these are the must-dos. Much to do about it. You just have to do it to be compliant. Otherwise, you can just only wait until you get into trouble. And I was recently at an event where someone said, well, with the must-dos, you should apply the 80-20 rule. And so I don't agree. The must-dos are the must-dos. So maybe I'm too much a lawyer, but otherwise it's just a question of time when you. So that's also kind of the easy thing in the sense of you know what you need to do. Although, we have to slow down certain politicians a bit because, you can put one must-do layer on the other and then another one and another one and another one that doesn't really save the planet.
No.
So, and that's the danger in the current environment. There are too many frameworks which are being implemented and they contradict to some extent. And then you have to report, European Union, and then comes international standards and so. So, there is a bit of a challenge, which is really kind of may become too much. But then there is the kind of on top of that, what do you really do to make the real difference, also to position yourself with the products in the market, because that's where you make a difference. And then there you have to do the analysis, what's really relevant. And you can do this based on this concept of the double materiality. So how do you impact the outside world, but also what is the outside world expecting and impact you? This inside out and outside in view. But you have to do this also with your clients to really see what matters for them. And that's also kind of the fun part because there you can make a difference in the market and build a competitive advantage.
Wonderful. And I also wonder a bit to what do you think will happen with the companies who do not have this approach and take on the S ahead, would you say?
There will be areas where they will lose out, clearly. And as I said before, we at Barry Callebaut, we see a certain shift from our clients where there is no way around it. Otherwise, you lose them as a client.
And for CEOs who wants to do good and wants to take on this aspect but do not have a board supporting them to do so, what would you give them? What tips would you give them?
To work with the board. there is always hope. There is always hope. And of course, you have to work hand in hand as the board and CEO and the executive team. So you must find the good balance together. Mm. But with this topic, it's not different than any other topic. If at the end you disagree, mm. you have to take your decision. It's a personal decision. Mm. Nobody forces you to stay. If you really think that the environment is not right, then move on. Mm.
Number one tips from you to everyone who's listening now on what action to take for a better future. What would that be, you say?
Well, you really have to think it through from your perspective. What matters most? And then you cannot do everything. And as a business, we are not responsible for everything. So to be very clear, we as business leaders, we have to be successful at the end. But there are areas where there is no shortcut, where we just have a responsibility, because otherwise it will backfire. And when business leaders complain about new regulations, very often the regulation is the result of bad behavior before. And which typically then hits everybody. There was selected bad behavior, and the regulation then hits everyone, which is very unfortunate, but that's how it goes. And politicians, basically have one thing in their hands, which is regulation. So that's just the environment. And we have to find our fine balance between this sometimes, and I said before, a bit overwhelming regulation, which we currently see, because there are too many frameworks overlapping but not fully overlapping. And that's a tremendous effort which is required just to be compliant. But there is this fine balance between this must do and this want to. We want to do it because we are sure we make a competitive difference, and that's how we will continue to be successful.
Thank you so much, Marcus. Thank you for a really important and good conversations about one of our time's most important topic that is overwhelming us from all directions for the moment. And I wish you a wonderful day, and I know many people who listen to this will be very inspired by your experiences and perspectives. So thank you so much for letting us have you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.